From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. The Women's Fund of Southwest Florida commissioned a study to find out just how women and girls are doing in the region. The results are out, and just in time for International Women's Day this week, we'll delve into the findings. Some results were predictable: how many women are registered to vote, how many have bachelor's degrees. Some were very telling: how many women and girls under age 18 gave birth or don't get prenatal care in their first trimester, or how many women-owned firms there are. We'll also talk about why Hendry County had some very interesting statistics. Plus, we'll meet Highlands County Sheriff Susan Benton, who serves as president of the Florida Sheriff's Association and was recently appointed to the board of the National Sheriff's Association. She's one of only two women sheriffs in the state. First, this news. This is Gulf Coast Live on WGCU. I'm Amy Tardiff. International Women's Day is celebrated around the world on March 8th every year. The focus ranges from celebrations of respect, appreciation, and love towards women to celebrations for women's economic, political, and social achievements. This year's international theme is the Gender Agenda, Gaining Momentum. Today, we'll celebrate with a look at the status of women in Southwest Florida, and later, an introduction to one of Florida's two women sheriffs. There are more than 583,000 women and girls in Southwest Florida. That's 50.7% of the region's population. A bit more than half are married. 1 in 10 is a member of a minority community. 18% are Hispanic, 9% are Black. Hendry County is the most racially diverse, with nearly 14% of the population classified as minority. The least diverse county is Charlotte. The median age is 42, but there are more than 152,000 women who are older than 65. Nearly 20,000 are over age 85. 1 out of every 5 females is under age 18. I know that's a lot of statistics. We won't bombard you with numbers today. The numbers come from the Women's Fund of Southwest Florida's recent desire to investigate the status of women in the region. The group commissioned the Regional Economic Research Institute at Florida Gulf Coast University to study 4 key areas. The fund's organizers are using the findings to guide them to create programs to help women and girls. Our first guest today is the director of the Institute and FGCU economics professor, Dr. Gary Jackson, who led the study. Thank you so much for joining us today.
It's my pleasure, and it's a pleasure to be able to talk about the study and how we were able to accomplish that with our students and the learning that went through that.
Do you know if research to determine the status of women and girls in Southwest Florida has been done before?
I have not seen one. I think this is probably the first. There have been similar studies done in like other states like California and up north as well, in Ohio. So we looked at those before we actually developed it, because they had broken ground in terms of different designs and so forth. And we used that to look at some major factors such as income and autonomy and health care and so forth.
Who decided what the 4 core areas of study would be?
Well, those were actually areas that were used in previous studies. So we used that model to look at population diversity, employment and income, achievement and autonomy, and health and well-being. And we wanted to take advantage of the fact that the 2000 census data had been released. Actually, it was being released while we did this study. And so what does it tell us? You know, what is the current state? And what can it tell us about women and their activities and in terms of income and so forth about our region here in Southwest Florida?
So you used the 2010 census and I think even some of the 2000 census for some things.
For a few things. There were they were rolling it out slowly, and for some of the data that like rural versus urban, that new data hadn't been released yet by the time we were ready to put the report out.
You also used the 2010 American Community Survey. What is that?
Well, census has been moving. They do what they call an American Community Survey, where they survey various areas more periodically. The census is trying to move from doing it every 10 years to doing more current stuff. 10 years is a long time to go between gathering information. So American Community Survey has been expanding, and it's giving us more current information, and so they're basically doing it by year. The survey, though, is not a census, since it's just a survey. It's actually not capturing everybody, but it gives us more current information.
Were any real people interviewed for this?
No. No, this was based on historical data. We used not only the census data, but data from the Department of Education, Department of Health, and so forth. And so there's a lot of data in a lot of different places. And what we tried to do is bring that together in one location. So it's easy to see these different areas that I mentioned and to really understand the whole range of information that's available on the status of women.
What were some of the big surprises in the findings?
Well, I think what surprised a lot of people is that the unemployment rate for women was lower than the unemployment rate for men. Traditionally, it's been the other way around. And so why did this change? And, it's not when you think about what we've been through here with the Great Recession, that's certainly part of it. What happened, we had a housing bubble with a financial crisis on top. We're still in recovery. I mean, this thing started way back for us in 2006 with a slowdown. And what's happened is it's hit construction and construction-related jobs very hard, and those tend to be dominated by men. And so basically they have a higher unemployment. A lot of the women's choices in professions have been in education and healthcare, and those actually have not been hit as hard during the recession and in many cases have had growth. So again, we're seeing it's not that women are not feeling a high level of unemployment, but they're actually doing a little bit better than men in terms of the impact on those particular industries.
And that, in fact, is one of the questions for future potential research is what will happen to women's unemployment when we do really recover?
Right. I mean, I expect both. I mean, right now, if you look at Lee County, we're at 8% unemployment overall, and things are improving. But from an economist's perspective, we really would like to see unemployment down around 6%. And I would expect that, we're going to see some improvements. One of the things that's happening over time is the labor force participation rate of women is increasing. What that means is more women are either in the workforce or they're actually actively looking for jobs. And that's an interesting trend because it allows us to increase GDP, standard of living, and so forth. I mean, it does give up some ability, in terms of if more women are working, that means there's not quite as much leisure time and so forth. We see that when we look at what's happening in Europe. They don't necessarily work a 40-hour week. They may work a smaller number of hours per week as well. So again, there's always trade-offs when you think about economics.
Now, for that labor force participation rate, apparently Southwest Florida's for women was lower than the state of Florida's.
Yes, and that may be related to the fact that we may have a higher percentage of retirees in the area. That may. But, I mean, a lot of folks, you have to think about what they're doing. A lot of folks may be working part-time. One of the things that the study found is that more women work part-time than men.
And when it comes to the labor force participation rate, women in Hendry County's rate is very, very high, but black women in Southwest Florida have the highest rate.
Yes. I mean, that might have surprised some folks that they are actually actively seeking or working more than, say, the white women or the average women. So, interesting data.
In the health field and any of the other fields, what surprises you most?
There was a few. I mean, there was some studies that were done that said in terms of people who look at whether, teenagers or young people get into drugs or get into alcohol and a little bit of surprise finding that women were more likely to fall into some of those categories, or in this case, girls or teenagers, than some of the boys. So that was kind of a surprise.
What did getting involved in this kind of research teach the four students who participated from FGCU?
This is part of a research institute. So our missions is really to have our students actually do practical work and do research. And so we had two of our students were women help out, and they did a great job of doing research. So we actually divided up each of the sections. We had four sections to each of the students. The students were required to gather the data and bring it back. And, of course, they saw a lot of the issues related to gathering data and concerns and whether or not, they had to validate and make sure that they really knew what was going on. So they learned about the census. They learned about different types of information. They were able to gather the information and be able to put it into a form that's going to be useful in the report.
For you, what do you think was the best reason for having done this study on the status of women?
I think it provides a benchmark to look at the data, to see what's actually available. I mean, there's a lot of perceptions out there, but this one actually gives us a way to actually look at what the data says. It also does one thing else, and that is that it tells us what we don't know. There's still other areas to explore, to really understand, to figure out what's going on in certain areas. So I think it's going to trigger questions, but hopefully we'll do this periodically to give us how it looks over time and how things are changing.
Now, there's a whole section on potential future research. What are some of the most intriguing questions posed in the More to Learn section that you would like to pursue, perhaps?
I think there's a lot of things to look at. Some of the reasons why fewer women are working in management occupations, is that because of information? Do we need to provide better ideas of what they are, role models and so forth? Those are all part of that. One of the questions I thought that was really interesting is, why aren't more women starting businesses themselves? Because I think we are seeing some of that. But still, 25% of the women, having their own business. You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting is choice of occupation. I think that there's an information gap there that could potentially be filled in terms of what are the occupations, what are the kinds of incomes that you could get.
If somebody came to you and said, let's design a study on, for example, females living in public housing or receiving Section 8 vouchers or the number and distribution of lesbians and bisexual women living in Southwest Florida, which were points for potential further study in this study, would it be possible to design that study, have students go out and do the work and come back and have your answers?
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that we do is we take on, take on a certain number of projects per year. But within that, I think those are very good areas to really explore. As a matter of fact, the census is moving more towards understanding, the lesbian and some of the needs and where they are in terms of women and so forth.
Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Dr. Gary Jackson is the director of the Regional Economic Research Institute and an economics professor at Florida Gulf Coast University. He led 4 students in the Women's Fund of Southwest Florida study on the status of women in Southwest Florida. And joining me now is one of the founding members and the president of the Women's Fund, Brenda Tate, to explore more about what can be done with the findings. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live, Brenda.
Thank you, Amy. Good morning. It's glad to be with you this morning.
Thank you. And you can join our conversation, 1-877-428-8255. That's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Or send email to gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Brenda, what is the Women's Fund's mission?
Amy, quite simply, the Women's Fund mission is to invest in women and girls in Southwest Florida in a very impactful, strategic manner.
Why was conducting the research TOPS on the Women's Fund's list of things to do?
We just decided that had to be our first order of business as we were organizing the Women's Fund. We felt that if we were going to support women and be as impactful as possible, we needed to know the issues. We needed to have baseline information to inform our areas of interest, our areas of focus, and where we were going to invest.
So what were some of the positive findings from the study?
We were so encouraged to find that overall women are doing pretty well. One interesting fact was to see that, in the recent downturn of the economy, women in business outperformed their male counterparts. But on the other side of that, we discovered that only 26% of the businesses in Southwest Florida are owned by women. So we think there's work to be done there.
Did it surprise you that Southwest Florida has nearly 95,000 foreign-born females who account for more than 16% of the female population?
No, that wasn't surprising, but it's nice to see it in print so that we really do begin to understand our population and find the most meaningful ways to address the issues that women in our region face.
What projects have you already determined that you're going to pursue because of the study?
This year we are organizing and raising money to support two projects that have come out of our understanding of the research. One is to establish a direct loan program for women in business that will allow women who want to start a business or expand their own business have access to capital. We discovered that this was a large barrier for women in business. And, of course, this fund will be paired with wraparound services such as mentoring, training, and counseling for the women who want to pursue a business. The other project that we're very excited about is competing for a federal grant that would allow us to offer low and moderate income women in our region the opportunity to establish a savings account, and they would be encouraged to save for either education, their first home, or business development. At the end of the day, when women achieve their savings goal, we'll be able to match them on a 2-to-1 basis.
The study found there are 103,000 women in poverty, and the highest poverty rate seems to be Black households in Glades County. Could this become a project for help someday?
Absolutely. We want to offer these services to women who qualify throughout our 5-county service area, which does include Glades County, in addition to Henry, Collier, Lee, and Charlotte. We're only limited right now by the amount of money we can raise to support these projects.
One of the categories was education, and looking at that, Southwest Florida has a lower percentage of women and men between the ages of 25 and 34 with bachelor's degrees compared with the rest of the state.
Right, and that's troubling and something that we need to keep our eye on as well. And again, I think that's where bringing a savings opportunity to allow women to build a financial asset that would allow them to continue their education or training would just be a huge boost to that woman, to her household, and ultimately the ripple effect throughout the community.
We're talking with Brenda Tate, president of the Women's Fund of Southwest Florida, about the status of women in Southwest Florida. Our phone number is 1-877-GCU-TALK. That's 1-877-428-8255. Comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Though women have a higher voter registration percentage than men across the region, Hendry County's is 11 points lower than the region's at about 55%. I'm wondering if the Women's Fund might try to increase women's voter registration there or anywhere.
We would love to increase women's voter registration. And in addition to that, we would love to see more qualified women hold elected office. You know, we were a little surprised when we saw the report and that we do not have a single woman representing our 5-county region in Congress. I think at the state house level, we have a 20 to 25% representation. And I just say we can do better than that. So we really do need to encourage qualified women to consider running for elected office and beginning to balance the playing field a bit.
Another one of the categories was health, so I have a few things to talk about there. Women have a higher rates of hypertension and higher rates of sexually transmitted infections than men in Southwest Florida. Maybe that's normal, but is there anything that can be done with that information?
You know, when we published this study, we made it available freely to everyone and anyone who were concerned about the issues facing women. And we hope that the healthcare professionals in our area will find the study useful and begin to think about their own program and services in ways that can begin to address these issues.
And here's another one that hopefully people will hear, because this one is a little startling. Birth statistics, more than 300 births were to women under age 18 in 2010. Births to unmarried women accounted for more than half of all births that year, and nearly one in three women in Southwest Florida do not receive prenatal care during their first trimester. Is that a similar situation where you're hoping that healthcare people hear?
We absolutely hope so in short term. And over the longer term, you know, I personally feel like this may be an issue that we want to tackle at the Women's Fund. Mm-hmm. Now, we're a new organization. Our capacity is limited, so we're focused like a laser beam on developing the two programs I mentioned earlier. But tackling the issue of early pregnancy and the implication that has for the woman and her family is, I think, something that we really must address.
In the longer term.
Yes.
Another similar thing, and I'm not expecting you to tackle everything, but these were some startling statistics that we find here. 5,700 alleged cases of child abuse and neglect in 2008 and 9, 226 rapes reported in 2010. Is that too many, do you think?
I think even one is too many. You know, one of the, this is a separate but related issue, one of the things that surprised us when we had the research completed was the lack of data on the issue of human trafficking in our area. And simply because of the lack of information on that, we've been led to explore why and what possibly can the Women's Fund do to responsibly begin to help address that for our region. So we're excited that the third project that we're tackling this year is to work with our region's law enforcement and prosecution officials and the human services providers to establish a centralized resource center to more effectively address this horrific crime of human trafficking. It's slavery. It's modern slavery.
And that wasn't even counted. I guess it wasn't even addressed in the study.
Well, it wasn't addressed because there was no data.
Mm-hmm.
And that was just a big red flag for us to look into that and you know, carefully explore, is there a role for the Women's Fund here? If so, what is it?
And I guess that would be one of the questions for more to learn for future research.
That's right. That's right. And by establishing a centralized resource, we'll be able to collect the essential data and analyze and use that over time to hopefully deter this crime in our region, establish that we will not tolerate it, and just put the bad guys away with the harshest penalties possible.
And one other thing I wanted to mention, there were nearly 4,200 women veterans in Southwest Florida. Were you surprised by that number? I'm not sure if that's a large number compared to the men veterans.
Yeah, I was happy to see the number reported, just so that we know the women who were veterans in that area, and so that we can be more thoughtful and focused about how we address the issues associated with women and men returning from difficult assignments around the world. So it just helps us give us a number so we know. And you know, I think because we don't have a large military base here, we may sometimes assume that our numbers aren't significant, but they're more than most people realize.
And when do you expect your first project to kick off?
As we speak, Amy, I am in the middle of a 36-hour giving challenge, a road trip stretching between Naples out to Immokalee to Lehigh Acres, end up in Sarasota today, raising money for the Women's Fund to get these projects underway as quickly as possible.
Thank you so much for joining us, Brenda.
Thanks, Amy. Appreciate you. Bye-bye.
Brenda Tate is one of the founding members and the president of the Women's Fund of Southwest Florida. It commissioned the FGCU Economic Research Institute to conduct the study on the status of women in Southwest Florida. That study revealed some very interesting statistics about Hendry County. Though there are a lot of not-so-good statistics for Hendry County for women, including how few are registered to vote, it also found things like the fact that more women head of households own homes in Hendry than in the state itself. To help sort out what's going on there is Dr. Marty Valiant. She served Hendry and Glades counties as their public health officer for 30 years before her retirement. Valiant is a pediatrician with a master's in public health who served the poor in the most rural areas. She most recently has been named a WGCU Maker, Women Who Make Southwest Florida. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live, Dr. Valiant.
Good morning, Amy. Happy to be with you, and I'm happy to be a part of this discussion on the status of women in Southwest Florida, and it's nice to see some attention being directed at the rural counties, because they do. There are a lot of rural counties, maybe 33 in Florida, and they have special issues, and in the subset of people that probably have the most issues are the women and children.
Yes. And I want to invite listeners to join in if they have something to add. The number is 1-877-428-8255. It's 1-877-GCU-TALK. Email us at gulfcoastlive@wgcu.org or comment on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Dr. Valiant, Hendry County women, on average, make more than men there, 123% more. Why do you think that is?
You know, I thought about that, Amy, a lot, and of course I'm not sure, but I suspect that it may be real. They may actually get an hourly wage that's higher than the men, but I think maybe that a lot of it is that most of the men's employment is seasonal, you know, agriculture, construction, and so on, and Dr. Jackson talked about what a hit the construction industry has taken when the housing bubble burst, and I bet that when it was, that the total amount that they made when it's annualized was what makes the men lower. I don't know.
Right.
I also know that women tend to do, the professional women can generally find employment and do all right. There's a lot of people that don't have high school diplomas, and that problem is worse in many of the rural counties. And so, you know, the uneducated women tend to go into things like child care and driving and getting an entry-level job in the school system and that kind of thing. But the pickers, you know, in the season when there's nothing to pick, they're not there. We've had some problems with immigration stings that have sensitized some of the laborers from other countries. Many of the people from Mexico, for example, didn't return after the pressure on the illegal immigrants was stepped up. So there are a lot of complex things that come into play here.
And that may be the same answer for why women head of household with no husband present in Hendry County have a home ownership rate more than 15%, which is even higher than the state of Florida. So it's probably the same.
I think you're right. And you know what else? When you say home ownership, don't think of a little bungalow with a fenced yard. You know, something like 35% of the homes of everybody in Hendry County are either manufactured homes or trailers. And some of those homes, quote, are, you know, old trailers that can be purchased for very few thousand. I mean, yeah, very, you know, not a lot of money. So we're not talking about a lot of upscale homes here. When we have disasters out here, and they tell people, you know, they do the recommend evacuation of the trailers. We have larger numbers that tend to go to shelters because so many people do live in trailers, you know.
That makes sense, yes.
Take a drive out here sometime in the country, you know. They just go on and on for miles, particularly in that corridor between LaBelle and Immokalee.
You know, women in Hendry County do have a higher percentage of hypertension and diabetes, understood, but they have the lowest cholesterol rate among women in Southwest Florida. What's with the cholesterol rate?
You know, I don't know, and I hope it's true. It may have something to do with the sample. I know this, that Hendry County, over the years, it tends to be a young county with, retirees don't particularly flock to Hendry County to settle. And for some reason, look at the statistics for the people
age.
Under 18, and you'll see that Hendry consistently just has more kids and that kind of thing. And that's probably part of it.
Diet?
The young population, you know.
More so than diet, you think?
Oh, no, I don't think so. I mean, their diet isn't any better than all the rest of ours. We eat too much fat and too much fast food. And, you know, I think the cultural diets are not you know, the Hispanic population don't really promote low cholesterol, so I don't know. It may be a sampling thing, too. You know, I don't know how many numbers, and, you know, who was this sample. There was another interesting statistic related in Dr. Jackson's study related to cholesterol that may play into it, and that was that in the state of Florida, 75% of people in that 2010 data said they had had their cholesterol checked in the last 5 years, and 60% of the people in Hendrick County had had their cholesterol checked. So it may be, you know, access to testing, and maybe the people who have access to go get their blood work done every year are people that have, you know, that have health insurance and that kind of thing, and so they may be more prone to try to stay on a healthier diet. I really don't know. I can't explain that one, but I'm going to say young population has probably figures into it somewhere.
Well, I do see here written down there are a lot more females under age 18 in Hendry County than there are in the rest of Southwest Florida, so you are probably right. And low cholesterol is something you have to look for as opposed to hypertension and diabetes, which you might go get treatment for, and then it's found otherwise. So
right, and it's not something that's routinely done. You know, a lot of young women, the only contact they have with health care is during their pregnancies, and it may not be a routine part of most prenatal workups. I would doubt it. You know, where if you're going to a family practice or a medical person, you might, you know, you'd be much more likely to get screened, but it's basically on a health screening that kind of thing is done. I know they do them at health fairs out here now, though, and I think that's good.
You can get in touch with Dr. Marty Vallian about the status of women and girls in Hendry County by calling 1-877-GCU-TALK, 1-877-428-8255. Only 3-4% of people in Glades and Hendry counties in that age group of 25 to 34 have bachelor's degrees, but Hendry County females have a higher percentage of graduate and professional degrees than males. And I think that maybe you were talking before about the fact that the males are more of the pickers. The females go ahead and go get the high school diploma.
You know what else? A benevolent resident some years ago left an endowment to the school system to provide tuition for anybody who graduated from Hendry County, you know, from LaBelle High School to go to Edison Community College, and that's a big factor.
So these
are very big factor.
Maybe these are some of the recipients counting.
I beg your pardon.
Some of these women may be some of the recipients.
You bet. You bet they are.
Interesting. How do you
and for many years, it was very underutilized. You know, I mean, they didn't use it. But now more and more young people are taking advantage of it, and it's a very sweet deal, you know.
It still exists? You can still do it?
Yes, yes.
Interesting.
You know, there was another thing, Amy, that has been talked about, and that's voter registration and same thing, going to the doctor to get tested. Most public clinics, for example, have no-show rates of patients that are astronomical, maybe greater than 50% sometimes on a given day. And transportation really plays into this. We have no public transportation out here. There's a Goodwheels bus that helps, but you have to plan, you know, you have to arrange for it to come, and you have to have some way to pay for it, and they do accept Medicaid. But that's a very big factor when it comes to voting, getting to register, getting to the polls, and, you know, that whole transportation thing in this county is major and has been. And the funding dwindles, you know, it gets worse rather than better.
There needs to be some sort of answer for that, lobbying legislators, things like that.
Yep, absolutely.
What else besides that would be tops on your priority list for the Women's Fund or others to pursue after seeing these research findings?
I was delighted Brenda contacted me earlier and told me about this small loan program that they're doing, you know, to assist women to get a start in business. And I think that's really exciting. And I think that they're going to have some takers. They're not going to beat the doors down. But, you know, this is how things go out here. You do it one at a time, baby steps. And you think, if you know, week by week you're not getting anywhere. But you look back over a period of 5 or 10 or 15 years and you realize we really have made some progress, and I think that's an area in which the Women's Fund can really help Hendrick County women get a leg up, you know.
Is part of the problem letting the women know, like you said,
yep,
with the education benefit?
Yes, absolutely. Getting the word out. And the best way to do it is often either, you know, through the schools or just word of mouth, but the churches. You know, the faith community is very helpful in publicizing and supporting these kinds of things. And there's a lot of really strong churches that do a lot of social services out here.
And what future research would you like to see done?
Gosh. I think I would just like to see improvement in some of the things that we already know, you know, the problems that we have, difficulties of access to care, and I think perhaps that's an area of research, although I think we all know intuitively what we need to do, and the answer, you know, basically, again, is dollars. Everybody's broke, you know, and healthcare funding has not been a popular issue because people don't want their taxes raised, you know, and you hear it on television every night, outraged, you know, over Obamacare, quote, et cetera. So, but that's the whole access to care thing, I think, is my issue.
That's all the time we have. Thank you so much for joining us, Marty.
Thank you, Amy, for asking me.
Dr. Marty Valiant is a pediatrician and the retired public health officer for Hendry and Glades Counties. A public forum on the status of women in Southwest Florida will be held next Wednesday, March 13th, from 11:30 to 1 at the Cohen Center at Florida Gulf Coast University. Information is at wgcu.org/Gulf Coast Live. We'll be back in a moment with one of only two women sheriffs in Florida, Highlands County Sheriff Susan Benton. She's newly appointed to the board of the National Sheriffs Association. You're listening to WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.